thanks for tuning in to another episode of The Corner Store. I'm your host, Kevin Koval. This is the bodega version of The Corner Store podcast because we are recording in a really nice loft in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. We have a really brilliant guest with us, a poet and an artist, a designer, a hustler, really.
Oh, thank you.
You know, I really appreciate, you know, what you put out into the world. We have Jasmine Manns in the building.
Thank you for inviting me here. I feel so, like, lucky that, like, because you're, like a legend in my world. So I'm like, holy shit, he asked me to be here. So
no,
I am so honored and privileged. So thank you.
I appreciate that. But you are also a legend.
No.
Well, you are this, but and your legend is continuing to be in the making, of course. But I want to begin just with, I guess, I first and foremost know you as a writer.
Mm-hmm.
And how did that come about? Where did writing enter your life?
I think my earliest memory of writing came when I discovered the greatest hits of Tupac. And I remember wanting to write after seeing that double disc album and memorizing words and wanting to write rhymes. Then in elementary school, they would let us battle rap.
What? And where did you go to elementary school?
I went to a Catholic elementary school in Newark, New Jersey. I don't know why they let us do this, but I became the star of the school because I beat everybody in the rap battles.
I mean, I believe that.
Right. Yeah. And so humble. And so I get to high school, and I'm very insecure. I'm very new at this high school thing. And I didn't think that I could be the little black girl rapper. And so my raps transitioned to poems. Mm-hmm. And they were more accepted in debate and in the classroom. Teachers really loved the writing. And so because I got so much support back from all of these spaces that welcomed me, I just kind of took to it. What's also something that might be unique about me is that my late uncle William Manns was Amir Baraka's lawyer.
Wow.
And they were part of the Black Arts Movement together. And so my uncle, and every time Amir Baraka was around, he'd be like, listen to my niece. And so that also became something. I didn't know who this old guy was when I was a little kid and my uncle was bringing me around and asking me to do poetry. But then as I grew up and as I got older, I realized how significant, right, those moments were. And even in the little moments of being at the cookout and they're like, be the talented little black girl right now. And being embarrassed, but also happy that I had something to give me a spotlight. And so I think there were two things. I really loved rap and writing, and I also really loved the positive attention. And so that kind of built this thing in me that wanted to keep going.
What are you mentioned your uncle. What do your folks do, or what did they do?
Well, my parents, they're artists in their own right. Like, my mother is an incredible designer, but she would never call herself that.
Clothing?
No, interior. Mm. And people hire her to design venues for weddings, and our house is beautiful. And we always had the house in the ghetto, but the most beautiful house in the ghetto. And the house that 80 family members will come back to be in the middle of the hood because this is the home. And so my mother is good at building home and good at building space, but she works at a hospital and my dad works at a hospital, and they're just two very, very hardworking black people. But my uncle, he was that black man in the family who made his career, who bought his house, who published a book, who knew art in a way that we just didn't get an opportunity, or my parents didn't get an opportunity to appreciate. Went to Cornell and was an alpha. And so, like, really brought a wealth of knowledge back to his family in Newark, who didn't go and leave the ghetto. So I took a lot from him, and he gave a lot.
It's I mean, let's not downplay the significance of his of just the black arts movement being around you in that way. At what point did you know that he had a role, a connection, and that this is essentially your lineage?
So I was an excellent speech and debater in high school, and I was on the bus going to Yale, and my coach...
Going to Yale?
We were competing at
yes,
Yale.
Okay, all right.
And my coach, he brings me up to the front row of the bus, and he's like, "Is Yili Bey your uncle?" And that was his, like, poetry name. And I was like, "Yeah." And he was like, "Me, Yili, and Amir was all in the Black Arts Movement together." And so
So who's your coach?
My coach is this man named Halim Suleiman. So this Halim Suleiman, who's a poet, beat poet, Amir Baraka, poet, and then my uncle, who was a poet but became the lawyer. And I was like, oh my God, God is looking out for me. Like, that was the moment that I was like, God wants me here. I'm specifically supposed to be guided. And then when I self-published my first book, it was dedicated to those three men. Mm-hmm. Because I did feel like God put me in their hands. Because my uncle died, then I met Halim Suleiman. He passed away. And Amir Baraka would have been the last to pass. And I didn't get personal one-on-one a training or relationship with him, but I just felt the need to become a student of his work after that. And so when I went to college, I wanted to find and learn everything that I could.
And of course, you went to college at
UW-Madison.
Yeah. Part of the First Wave program.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
For those that don't know, first of all, I kind of want to talk a little more about Newark, New Jersey.
Yeah.
And before we get to college, actually, because it has, you know, New Jersey has a really important poetic history. And so how much of that were you privy to as a young person?
I learned a lot. I learned a lot about the history of Newark in high school. I went to a performing arts high school, and I had a great coach and mentors. And so as I tried to dwell as a writer, I wanted to know the history of my city. And then I did learn through the poet mentors that I stumbled upon that, like, yes, there's a great history. There's a Black Arts Movement. There was the Newark riots. There has been so much great leadership in our city, or like learning about like Black women millionaires who lived in Newark and bought mansions and all of these, or like there was this woman who built an ark, like a whole boat in Newark. And like, there are things that like we don't talk about, but we have such a rich history that I do take pride in even things that are like terrible, and knowing like about Assata Shakur, and that all of that happened on the New Jersey Turnpike. Mm-hmm. And that I'm riding with my mom going to the grocery store, and there's still signs that say wanted $1 million for Joanne Chesmar, and that's in Newark.
Mm-hmm.
And on the Turnpike, where like, so it's like this history, ugly and beautiful, or like the masjids are still downtown, and some of them are the ones that are referenced in I think the Manning Marble book about Malcolm X. And so I'm like, oh, this is what they were talking about. And so I take pride in it, especially like being the Black girl who hears so many narratives of people like, this is a bad city, this is an unsafe city. And I know that my city has sculpted the narrative of so much positive change for this country, and has been a guinea pig for so many different ideas and desires for the nation.
And there's great hip hop in Newark.
Right.
Right.
So
who are some of the folks that you came up listening to?
Right. So it was like, even I think Lauryn Hill's piece, I think it's called like Every City, Every Ghetto.
It's one of my favorite songs.
And she's naming like Bergen Street, Lyons Ave. And I'm like, yeah, I grew up around the corner from here. My mom works on Bergen Street. And so it's just like, when that song, when I heard it, I was like, yeah, this is like for me.
For real?
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
And then you have women like Queen Latifah, Whitney Houston, and I always talk about how Whitney Houston was one of the donors for my dad's homeless shelter that he was managing. And so as a little girl, I would see Whitney Houston like once a year giving bikes and PlayStations. And so that narrative of Whitney Houston being a drug abuser and all of these different things wasn't as prevalent as the narrative of her being this like fairy godmother and coming in and giving all of these kids in a shelter bikes and PlayStations, right, where they weren't going to get anything. So yeah, hip hop music, like there are some brilliant artists that like we don't name too much, or we don't talk about how Newark or New Jersey contributed to how incredible they are as artists today.
Yeah, and we don't really give New Jersey its props in terms of the foundation of hip hop in the way that we should too. I mean, you know, I think people know more or less the narrative of where it begins, but because Jersey is so close to New York, that so many incredible early pioneers, but people who furthered the aesthetic are, you know, born and bred
still in Jersey.
Yeah,
still here.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so interesting because, and a lot of them have moved to Jersey.
Right.
Like, yes, there's some brilliant curators and photographers who lived in Brooklyn, born and raised in Brooklyn, and moved to New Jersey because it was sustainable for whatever reason, and navigated the arts in both spaces. And that's what we see all the time because it's another borough to many people. And so it would be foolish, right, if you could not to navigate both areas, New Jersey and New York. And so it's like I realized that like my mentors back in the day were doing it, like we were going over to Brooklyn and da 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 da, we were coming over to Newark for blah 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 blah. And so I think that pathway has existed for quite some time.
Now you take all of this.
Right.
This tradition, this heritage, this lineage, this urban experience in Newark, and then you take your talents to Madison,
South
Wisconsin.
Beach. Right.
First Wave, for those that don't know, is a hip hop arts scholarship program. Really the first of its kind in the country. And you spent your college career there.
I spent 5 years in Madison, Wisconsin.
So Madison, Wisconsin, for those that don't know, is not like Newark, New Jersey.
Not at all.
Right. So how did you maintain?
Man, I was so proud because it was free. And so I was ecstatic that I received a free education and my parents wouldn't have to pay for anything, and they were proud. And so for a minute, I thrived off of the level of pride. Like, I made it out of my ghetto, step one, right? Then it becomes, holy shit, I don't belong here. Hmm. Like, I remember, like, going to college and being like, I'm going to law school, I'm going to be a lawyer, and failed every political science class horribly. And then being like, am I smart enough to be here? Like the average GPA at UW had to be, like, 3.4 or 3.6. And I was like, I'm not smart enough to be here. Hmm. And so I had to adjust to the wealth of education and knowledge and the brilliant education, right? Because I really feel like I took some amazing classes with amazing professors. And then there was this creative edge that was asked of us and that I wanted to ask of myself. And so I remember my mind shifting to like wanting to have the most poems and wanting to have the most creative poems and wanting every opportunity. And so like I remember wanting and taking, and then like I remember my roommate would ask me every night, do you want to smoke? Do you want to smoke? And I'll be like, no, because it was more fun to win for me. Mm. And so I wanted to write poems and win so I could go to New York and do the Knicks poetry or do the New Amsterdam Theater program or travel to the UK to do an event, that there were so many different opportunities offered at the time that I was just like, I want them. I just want to keep doing well and I want to be the best. And it was a community that offered that. And we had like cold ass winters. And so it's just like, we were in the dorm writing poems, and that was a world for us.
Yeah, and you're doing that in part in community.
Yeah.
Right.
Because First Wave at the time, I don't know if it's still this way, but all of the freshmen had to live on the same floor.
Right.
So we lived together. And then we also had to choose from some of the same classes. So we were always together writing and creating. And these are some of the people who I was at Brave New Voices with the year before. And there were like brilliant artists who came from Hawaii and who were from different parts of the world. And we got to know each other, and we like, and some of us couldn't afford to go home for Thanksgiving because we were going home for Christmas. So we shared in each other's cultures and each other's disciplines. And so I think that was something tremendous that I got from college, just being existing and creative cultures and taking what I wanted from those things.
So at this time, who are some of the folks that you are being influenced by aesthetically? Like when who were you reading or wanting to write like? Who did you imagine yourself to be, or what traditions did you imagine yourself to be participating in?
Well, it's really interesting to talk about college because I just emailed one of my old professors and asked her for a syllabus because I wanted to reference some of the teachings that that we studied when I was in her class. I'm looking at Wade in the Water by Tracy K. Smith and how she writes slave narratives. Because I was trying to wrap my head around that for weeks, and I was like, maybe I'll go back to the autobiography of Frederick Douglass or somewhere to like really get slave narrative language down in a way that isn't cliche but honest and really thoughtful historically. And I'm like digging into her works and listening to the voice. I just got this new book by Gwendolyn Brooks, which is like some of her old collected pieces, and I like how she's not afraid to tell these sad stories, and how she can tell them plainly. And sometimes we want to use words that are very unnecessary, and we want to do things that don't necessarily contribute to the text, to the bigger story. And I think that what she's teaching me is simplicity, and that it is okay to tell a sad story.
Yeah, Miss Brooks is the GOAT. I mean,
the GOAT, man.
Yeah, really. There is no iller.
It's so many people. And then I'm trying to stay inspired by people who are not poets. And so sometimes what helps me is like things that just talk about confidence or talk about how to control your own emotions and how to be a loving and thoughtful person. And so, yeah, a ton of things inspire me. And then there's so much more that I want to read. Like, I have a couple friends who are Toni Morrison fanatics. And so a goal is to dive into her work again and just rediscover and be a student of the works. But yeah, Gwendolyn Brooks, Tracy K. Smith, everyone is in love with Ocean Vuong and his new works. And yeah, there's so many, but it's like, I'll read everybody's book. Like, I will read and highlight in everybody's book and take words that I'm like, I will use that word one day. Or nice. I want to explore that concept better, or I'm going to do that differently. There was one poet, is it Fatima?
Yeah, Fatima.
And I pulled her book. I work at the library too, so
oh,
like
right now?
Yeah.
Oh, word.
And so like I still books bring them back. No, I'm the resident poet.
Yeah.
And so I get so much access to just take Dope. Books and they don't question me. And so if I see a book of a poet that like, I follow on Instagram, like I'll grab the book. And the for months we were talking about putting a crossword puzzle in the book and having like little references. And I thought that that was my brilliant idea. I'm like, this next level. Open her book, and Shorty has it in her book, and it crushed me. But I was just like, and then it made me want to fall in love with her more and see not just what she was writing, but also how she put things on the page. And so I think I'm a bit double-minded when it comes to poetry, because not only am I looking at what is being said, but how, like the aesthetic, the presentation of that thing, how did this artist want me to digest this? And so I like pulling from everybody's stuff.
And I want to talk about what you're working on now, but I want to go back to college for a minute, because I feel like, and I might be misremembering, but I think this is right. You, at that time, when you were in college, were one of the first poets I remember to go viral off of a video.
That's crazy, right?
Is
that's
that right?
So funny.
Right, and this was
sort of.
This was a video. This was a poem. Was this about Wayne?
No, it's about Nicki Minaj.
Nicki Minaj. That's right. Yeah. So that, but that's correct, right?
I mean,
So that must have been pretty wild, like, because that video got distributed and seen.
So it's so wild, because I'll tell you the backstory. The year before, that poem was the highest ranked poem at CUPSI, and so all of the poetry world,
poetry slam.
Of the poetry world was well aware that this poem came out, that this poem was in the world, but we weren't putting poems on YouTube in 2010. It just wasn't the wave. And so I don't know if you're aware. You know Camila Forbes, probably. Camila is like,
from
I'm
the
help-
Deaf Poetry Days.
Right. I'm working on the Monique show for BET. She wants to put poets on her show. Can you please put two poems on YouTube so they can review them so that we can potentially pick you for the show? Camila Forbes is my mentor. I'm interning for her every summer after I come home from Madison.
Oh, wow. Yeah. She's so dope.
She's like, she taught me the game, low-key. Yeah. And
Chicagoan, you know that. Chicagoan. She's from.
Oh, yeah, right. And so I put the poems on YouTube. Poem about Michelle Obama, poem about Nicki Minaj. And it was for the producers of this Monique show. And it wasn't to be seen by anybody, honestly. And then getting calls. And then watching the number go from 10,000 to 20,000 to 30,000. And then I get a call from Rafael Casal, who we know as Rafa, and he's like, hey, meet me in the library. Meet Rafa in the library. And he pulls up jasminemans.com, and he built my whole website. He's like, this poem is going to change your life. You need to be ready for it to change your life. Here's your website. I want you to accept these bookings. If you need any support, come follow up with me, blah, blah, blah. Then we have class, and I'm in Rafael Casal's class, and he sits me in the middle of the class, and he's like, ask her questions about it. Question it. And look, my classmates, my cohort of poets just ripped me apart of like, well, why did you say this line, and what does this line mean, and what does this line, trying to prepare me for the narrative and the conversations that I would have with people who just wanted to kind of trigger me and troll me because of the writing. And so he was the first person that was like, let's get you tight. Wow. And really like...
What a service. I imagine that...
Yeah, man, because I didn't expect it. I didn't know what it meant to have a viral piece. And
well, no one did really at the time, right? I mean, it's kind of prior to that moment,
right? And
so, what happened? How did your life change? I mean, because your life did indeed change after that.
Yeah, sort of.
Okay.
It became. I did the Monique show, but they were like, "You're not going to do that poem." So I did my dedication to Michelle Obama. I remember Monique hugging me and said, I heard that poem, girl. And I felt so validated.
Because what was it about the Nicki poem?
The Nicki Minaj poem was basically about arguing that, like, Nicki Minaj over sexualizing herself, it creates a damning narrative for Black girls, and that you are not a mentor, and that why are you not using such brilliance for other blah blah blah,
which now does not seem so controversial,
right?
But at the time, you caught a lot of flack for that notion,
right? And I just think maybe because it was unexpected, in a sense of, like, why are you questioning her at a time where a Black woman is becoming a successful...
This was in her kind of
prime
height.
Superstar, right?
Like, this right around the MonsterVerse, maybe.
Pink hair.
Yes.
Yeah, this is
Barbie.
Like...
Barbie's came
this
at
is,
you.
Exactly. This is Barbie world. So why would you do this at this moment when she's a star? But it received also really positive attention, where it's just right. Like people wanted to have conversations about the over-sexualized Black girl, and how does the Black girl need to use sex in order to get success in the industry? And so that conversation is very, very different now for Black girls in the industry. But at that moment, it was questions that were in a way necessary.
And remain necessary, I would say, too. I mean, you know.
Because for spaces that we come from, in a sense of, like, we're always critically thinking about art, right? That's not the truth for everybody in the world, for most of the world.
Yeah.
So it's just like, for them, it's like, why are you dissing? Why are you talking shit? And it becomes like, I sent Nicki Minaj hate mail.
Right.
And I'm like, hi, I'm writing a poem. And it was a critical poem. This is my art, guys. I do this. This is my art. And no, I don't think the outside world got that part, that this is an artist who makes art, and she critically wrote about another artist.
Yeah. And a genre, and the country, and a history, and all these other things,
the
too.
The world just sees this, like, negative and positive.
Yeah. So, of course, you know, you have gone on to do many other things and write many other poems. I do want to talk about what you have going on now. You mentioned you're a poet in residence at the library.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But what are some of the things that you're working on right now?
I just got a publisher, and I remember calling you.
Congratulations.
I was calling you, and I was like, yo, is this deal all right with my management and all of these different things?
I do remember that.
Yeah, it's always a struggle as an artist, as an independent artist.
I hope that was helpful, that conversation.
It was incredibly helpful, because I don't have a manager right now.
Okay.
But I signed with Berkeley Penguin Random House.
Right.
The book went to auction, which was such a crazy experience for me to even see before my eyes. And what was even more special about my process is that my agent set in front of me packages. And they were like, this is how we package up books so that we can pitch them to our publisher contacts. Bring us your package.
Mm.
And I not only was I thinking about the words, but also the design aesthetic, and like, how should this feel? And like, you do cool shit too, so you think about this stuff too. But I was like, how should this feel? And so I'm like building this package, and I want it to be just next level. And they were just like, how'd you do this? And how much did this cost? Because this package is crazy. And I was just like, I just made it myself on this website. And because literally, I didn't know how much this book would be worth. I didn't know who would take it. I didn't know if it would go anywhere or how long. But like, it felt so good to build something, and to package myself, and then to package my work, and then for someone to say, like, not only is this work beautiful, but your delivery is beautiful.
That's significant. So this is a book that was the book was written, and you or it's, yeah, it's the
so
idea?
We gave them about six, at least what I thought, because I thought that I was going to write maybe a 100-page book. And so we delivered to them about maybe 50 or 60 pages of text. And then they were like, but we want a 200-page book.
Of poems?
Yeah.
Wow.
So this is going to be a little bit different. And it put me in a whole different kind of space. So I'm like, all right, now I have to write 100 more poems. Okay.
Dang, right.
And so...
it's only a big book of poems.
Yeah, I got 22 poems left to write.
Okay.
So I'm doing good. I feel strong.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you're in the gym.
It feels like it.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it's like, I want more of it, and I'm hungry, and I want to be more creative with it, and
Is there a pub date?
Not a date, but it is spring 2021.
Okay, okay, great.
So I have so much time to just be a thinker.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Now, in the meantime, the thing that I've seen via IG mm-hmm. that I've really loved is your design work.
Yeah.
Because you make clothes mm-hmm. and coffee mugs and put your language in a different way. You represent it graphically mm-hmm. in really like interesting, beautiful spaces. That comes from seeing your mom make space pretty, or how did you get into the realm of the visual space and the textual space?
I was looking at an article probably on ASCAP.com, and it was just like, if you go on tour, you sell merch. It was as simple as that. And so it was like, all right, let's figure out merch. And so, believe it or not, the coffee mugs were just so cheap. And though delivered an aesthetic of like, this is quality because it's glass. And so it gave us that balance of like, this is a $1 product, yet the glass and the fact that my quote is on it is going to make you buy it for $25. And so the return was just unlike anything else. And then I realized, oh, I can sell these coffee mugs with the ticket sales to the shows.
Right.
And so I was realizing that I was making a lot more money. And then it was became really passive in a sense that everything was just begin to sell online. And so it wasn't just an offset of I can make more money while on tour. It was now I can run an online store in spite of what I'm doing, right? And then it became people wanting the products in spite of who I was. It would be stores who are like, we can sell it. And so we got our first store in New York like 2 years ago, and they were like, we want coffee mugs and shirts and we'll do it and blah, blah, blah. And every week I would see this, like, I would go on this website and check the sales and like didn't have to do the work. And so then I started just focusing and thinking about how brilliant it is to have passive income and thinking like an entrepreneur, like, yes, that is what we want. We want to be able to make money in our sleep and do as little work as possible with the highest quality of art that we can deliver. And so...
But not little work, because you stay working.
Exactly.
It's really about like just the multiple hustles, the multiple streams of income. And, you know, for you, it's the different audiences and the different ways that you can get out the messages that you are putting out into the world.
Right.
Right. Because it's not just beautiful items. I mean, even there's content and meaning in the graphic textual stuff that you put into the world.
And I didn't consider myself a designer, honestly, until maybe this year, because I'm just like, I'm a poet. I'm just putting poems on. But
you sell enough t-shirts, it would... Yeah.
And then we did... I started this thing, Buy Weed from Women, because, and it's interesting because poetry and marketing, because we know how things should sound. We know how people digest things. And so it's like, I literally know what to put on the shirt and why other people's shirts suck. And so I put it Buy Weed from Women, and then I realized that they didn't need a Jasmine Manzor to know who I was to participate in buying it. They felt like it was their narrative. Mm-hmm. And so it was like I was watching t-shirts literally pay rent And I was like, this works, and we can build a culture, and I have a passion for it that is not connected to poetry. And so, yeah, I like it, and it's crazy because I've strategized, and I don't know how well this is going to work, but strategize like taking a percentage of what I will get from my book advance and putting it into my Buy Weed From Women company and building out $1 million company.
Oh, that's smart.
I hope, man.
You should be doing.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm going to do it.
Yeah. I'm going to do it.
Yeah. Because you're already doing the work, so you don't need to pay yourself to do the work.
Right.
You know, you're already doing it. You know?
Exactly.
And so, yeah, to invest in yourself is really the key.
Yeah.
Where can people be in tune with all of this, all of what you're doing?
Yeah, I'm on Instagram. Everything is Jasmine Manns or Poet Jasmine Manns. My website always has all of the new merchandise and tour dates and stuff like that. Buyweedfromwomen.com is going to have, like, all of these awesome clothes, but also we're going to give a percentage of the funds to different women organizations. We're looking to give funds to an organization in New York that bails out women. We're thinking of giving money to organizations like Planned Parenthood. But in Buy Weed From Women, I've decided that the mission is also to support women. And so that is going to be a leading part of this narrative. And, going to keep going.
Please. I mean, I know you will. And it's really exciting to watch. And I'm so glad that you were able to come into the Corner Store today.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be here. I feel so grateful. And you're an idol. You're a legend. So I'm very humbled to have had this experience with you.
No, I appreciate you. Yeah, thank you.
And this is our first time vibing.
I know. Yeah, that was a good way to kick it off.
Thank you.
We're about to go get some sushi and continue.
Yeah.
So, yeah, thank you.
Appreciate you.
Shout out our super producer, DJ Cashera. Big up boss man, Todd Manley. Thank you to our official Corner Store photog, Mercedes Zapata. Salutes to the Snack Door Max. Also, please, y'all, follow our Instagram. It's corner_pod on IG, on Twitter. Tell us who you want to see in the Corner Store. And also, please consider dropping a couple of dollars into our Patreon account. It's patreon.com/cornerstore_pod.
The Corner Store is brought to you by Stolen Spirits.